All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 281 of the DFO Rundown, brought to you by Betano.ca. The game starts now. You lock NHL, you got lots going on. Of course, the NBA back in full swing. You can go on parlays, you can go on player prop bets. They got it all. Have fun in the game at Betano.ca. Happy Monday. I'm Jason Greger. We welcome in Frank Saravalli as we are 11 days away from the NHL trade deadline. There hasn't been a trade since Sean Monahan early in February, and we got 3 days left, Frank. Are we going to go tradeless for the rest of February? Sure seems like it.
Man, the odds would be against that, but it does feel like that. Look, it's always the kiss of death to say this, especially on a recorded podcast that some may not listen to for 2 or 3 days. But I don't know of anything right at this exact moment in time that's front burner.
Yeah. I spoke to a GM yesterday who said he's surprised. It's actually been kind of quiet. It's like, I don't know if everybody's just waiting or the fact that there's little cap space available, Frank, for all those top teams. That
it's not the cap space. Nope.
Yeah.
No, it's... everyone that I talk to doesn't really like the market. High prices for guys that may not be impact players.
Yeah, well, and that's fair. And to me, that's always the, that's always the game you play. No GM is going to come out and say, "Whew, I really like the price point, and man, there's some great players available." No chance. But I think it's a combination. I do think the cap space plays a factor a little bit. Teams having so little. Now, a team like Toronto has lost because of Klingberg on LTIR, but they've won 7 in a row. So they don't feel like they have to rush. I still think that they're going to make some deals, no question in my mind, but maybe you're not, the urgency isn't there. And part of me is like, you know what? I'd rather amass flurry in the days leading up to the deadline, make it more fun.
I know there will be moves. Like,
oh yes,
we can't. I think there's a 0% chance that Colorado, Edmonton, and Dallas don't make any moves. To say nothing of Vegas, that's at least 4 teams right there that I'd be stunned if they don't do anything. New York Rangers, same category. I'm sure the Florida Panthers will find a way to add. I know the Toronto Maple Leafs would like to. What's Steve Yzerman and the Detroit Red Wings up to after a thrilling week and a couple magical performances from Patrick Kane. Like, there's plenty of teams that want to do stuff that we'll see things happen. It's a matter of when.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And there is one team, Frank, I think after this weekend, reality should set in for that organization. And it's not just about this year. I think it's about the future. And a player, when you consider the people I've talked to, there's much more interest in wanting to acquire players with term if you can. And I look at the New York Islanders, Frank, they cannot bring the band. Everything we said at the start of the year has come to fruition on the New York Islanders. Everything. Now, I've been wrong on a lot of other teams, but I was right about the about them. And they brought back the exact same team that missed the playoffs. Right now, we traded for Bo. You had Bo Horvat for a long time. Okay, it's not an argument. It's the same team. And the one guy, Frank, if I was the Islanders, and I think you would have lots of interest from other teams, is Brock Nelson. And it's not that I'm trading Brock Nelson because he isn't good, but they need to get some other, they need to retool that team. They have no choice. And I don't think they have a lot of guys that have trade value, but he has trade value. And you could get him for two runs. If I'm the Islanders, I would look at, if I was other teams, I would start calling to see what the interest would be.
Man, it goes against everything that it feels like the Islanders think, which is they have a better team. Like, we have this mound of evidence to suggest that the Islanders are just a mediocre to below average team. And they're clinging to this idea of 4 years ago, they went to back-to-back East finals, and that if they get in, they could get there. And some of it's on the strength of their goalie. Every single move that they've made, whether it's been trading for and then extending Horvat, or all of the guys that they've re-signed and kept, I know that Lou Lamoriello is loyal, but it seems like almost to a fault now. Like, how many times do you need to see the same thing before you realize that this team is just okay?
The Islanders are who they are.
The definition of mid.
Yeah, like the last 3 years, Frank, including this season, the Islanders are 20th in points percentage. They have 102 wins in 221 games. They don't even win half their games. That's who they are. And because that core has been the same core. They have an elite goalie. It doesn't matter. Right. It's just how it is. And they need to wake up and realize that that's who they are. Right. They're not good enough. Point blank. They're simply not good enough. They're 26th in offense, Frank. What do we say? They can't score. You can have the best goalie around, but you can't score. You can't win. Like, they're 2.88 goals for, 2.89 goals against. Right. And they're considered a defensive team. They're 26th in the NHL in offense. And they still have allowed more goals than they score. Like, I'm sorry. That's just, they're not good enough. Now, defensively, I think they're 10th in that time. So that's fine. But it's not good enough because you can't outscore your good defense. Like, it's a reality check for the Islanders. And if they don't, their fans need to be calling for this because their team is not improving. It's not. And who's the young guys that are coming?
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, like, honestly, Brock Nelson, if I was an opposing GM, it makes a lot of sense. He makes a lot of sense. He's a really good player. I'm not saying that you trade him because he's not good. You're trading him because he's going to help you, because he can't help you. Like, he isn't good enough. He's not an elite player. He's not a superstar player, but he's a really good top six forward, like really good. And
Cal Clutterbuck would be as good as any bottom six forward you could add.
Yep. Yeah,
and he's a guy that, for whatever reason, chips in an odd number of playoff goals for someone who barely scores more than five a year.
Yeah.
In 2021, he had as many goals in the postseason as he did in the regular season. I don't know why that is. He's got 12 career playoff goals.
Yeah. Like, and that's their problem. Like, he's a pending UFA. So is Matt Martin. Guys like Mike Riley, Sebastian Aho, Robert Bortuzzo, like,
but wouldn't you really be shocked if they end up selling? I would.
Well, I'll be shocked if they don't sell, because if they don't sell, then guess what? It's time for them to make a GM change. Cause he's clearly out of touch with where today's NHL is. If he doesn't sell some pieces off at the deadline.
They are 9 points back with three games in hand.
Yeah, and how many teams ahead of them?
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, well, technically four, right? Because you got to catch Detroit or Tampa or technically right. Philly, right? So you got to jump four teams. Not happening. Right?
Yeah, they're technically 7 points back with two games in hand.
Yeah. They are
both the wild card teams are from the Atlantic right now.
Yeah. So if you go to Philly, right? Like it's not and it's two games in hand on Philly. So I don't see it. Like they're 3-4-3 in their last 10. They're going nowhere. You know, Patrick Watt came in and you know, good for him, but he's not a miracle worker. Like you can't just magically have high-end offensive guys if you don't have high-end offensive guys. Right?
Minus 28 goal differential.
Yeah, they can't score. So
16 regulation wins.
Oh, dude. Like Noah Dobson.
The Sens have a three more than that.
Yes. Yeah. The Islanders, sorry, Islander fans. Your team isn't competitive. You have a great fan base. But you should be demanding change. It's don't I what Lou's done in New Jersey is irrelevant to today. It's irrelevant. What you did 3 years ago for the Islanders is irrelevant today.
It's funny that you mentioned all that because yesterday I was working on my story. Jake Guentzel is today's trade deadline countdown, and I was looking at the market and I was looking back for Guentzel, like what is a trade? What is a proper trade comp for Jake Guentzel? And I was looking and I said, well, Bo Horvat traded north of a point per game in his contract year. I know he's a center. That's probably a pretty decent trade comp. But then I was thinking for a larger picture, like how kind of bad that return is for a player relative to the rest of the market. Meaning like there's a really odd thing about the way the NHL trade deadline works is you could see Sean Monahan go for not much more than what Jake Guentzel returns, which is, it's really odd. Like if you go back and you look at the last 15 years of deadline history, it is incredibly rare, insanely rare, that a point per game impact player, let alone a goal scorer of Guentzel's caliber, becomes available. Yet there's not typically a huge, massive return for those guys. The two best comps that I could come up with were the Bo Horvat trade and the Matt Duchene trade from Ottawa to Columbus. But even then, Duchene going from Ottawa to Columbus brought the Sens a first round pick, Vitaly Abramov and Jonathan Davidson. Those two guys combined to play 11 total NHL games for the Sens. So they were nothing.
Yeah.
And the first round pick was 21st overall. I mean, it's fine, but like for a point per game winger, it's a really odd development in the market that I can't quite put my finger on why. Like you would think that because that's the case, that more teams would then be involved to try and get those higher end players that rarely become available. Do you have any theory as to what that is? And by the way, the reason I went to that and was explaining it is because I was thinking back to the Canucks trade and how they didn't really get a lot for Horvat. And what you said about Lou Lamoriello and what he's done in New Jersey being irrelevant to Long Island, just because the Canucks then went and took that pick from the Horvat trade and went out and got Philip Hronek, that's irrelevant to the return that they got for Horvat. What you do with that pick after the fact is utterly irrelevant. It's what did you get in the moment? And it was a first round pick, 17th overall, but you also had to retain a quarter on Horvat. You took on Anthony Beauvillier's $4 million to make the money work, and you got Atu Ratu.
Yeah. Yeah, and Beauvillier
may not be anything.
Yeah, Beauvillier's already gone to Chicago. It's kind of a salary dump. Think about that.
That's one of the best players traded in the last 5 years. Yeah. At the time, Horvat had 29 goals in 34 games.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it's this. When it's an expiring contract, you're acquiring a guy who's older And now you're going to have to pay him huge money if you want to retain him, right? And so you look at Guentzel, and if we just look at stats alone, Guentzel's offensive numbers are much better than Bo Horvat's, right? Historically in his career, right? He's a two-time 40-goal scorer, had 36, 80 points.
Four of the last 5 years, he has north of a point per game.
Yeah, and
Horvat, he had one great year and is back to being a really nice 55 to 60 point center. Yeah,
that's what he is. And Jake Guentzel, so you look at teams right now, Frank, I think, you know, cap, even if, you know, he's a pending UFA, so even if Pittsburgh retains half, right, you still look and say, but there's no guarantee, because at the time of the trade, unless it's a sign-in trade, there's no 100% guarantee you get to retain his rights. Right. So now the team's like, geez, do I want to give up this much for a guy who I might not have? Like, look at what Edmonton, and because there's not many players that get traded with lots of term, right, that are good players. But Matthias Ekholm last year, they gave up Tyson Barrie, you know, cap space, whatever, to make it work. Then a 32nd overall pick in Reed Schaefer, and then a first round pick that year, and a fourth, right? Like, and Reed Schaefer wasn't a high end prospect at the time, right? And that's for a guy with 3 years left on his deal at a set number. Like, I think during the season, Frank, the teams that trade those players historically don't get as much as you would in the summertime.
It's a bizarre factor of the market. Like, I personally think having no term is a good thing in this case. And I think having the term that the Oilers got, this is, and I'm in the minority on this, but I don't really want to know what Matthias Ekholm looks like in the last year of his deal, because I don't think he's going to age well.
Yeah, he might not, but you're looking, if you get three good playoff runs from him, you're fine.
Yeah, okay. But you're still going to have to contend with the last year of the deal, and you should still be in a competitive window to win. The Guentzel thing is going to be fascinating, because whoever gets him, or whoever signs him, he's been criminally underpaid at $6 million for the last number of years relative to market. So you're going to have a guy who wants to cash in, one. Mm-hmm. And two, he's going to be 30 years old when he plays on your team for the first time under that new deal.
Yeah.
It's going to be hugely problematic. I'm not saying he's like, I think he could age just fine. He skates incredibly well. He's in the 93rd and 94th percentile for speed bursts. His mind is sharp. He's, you know, it's one thing to get to those areas. It's another thing to, you know, arrive on time and find soft space, which he does really well. But 7 or 8 years, taking him to 37 or 38, at what number? Probably starts with a 9.
Yeah, I think the one thing Guentzel has in his favor, he's only played 500 NHL games. Doesn't have a lot of, you know, tread on his tires, not aware. And so let's say you sign him, and for the first 6 years, he plays every game. He's still not at 1,000 games yet, right? So that's kind of a little bit of an advantage for him, I think, you know, a little bit of a late starter in the league. So there's not as much, you know, wear and tear on his body.
It's going to be... not just acquisition wise, but cap wise, it's a significant transaction. Oh,
that's why I think honestly, Jake Guentzel, I think your initial point is right. And that's why I kind of want to say, so in your process, did you have a list of the three best fits for Jake Gay? Like, what are the three most realistic landing spots for Jake Guentzel in your eyes?
So let me just pull up my list here. Cause I think I listed 7 teams total.
Right.
Like, and I had one sort of really, really wacky one.
Yeah.
Like, Arizona is my really wacky wild card.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not happening. Not as a
dad. His dad works there as a pro scout. They obviously would know him really well. They need difference makers. And more than that, the Coyotes have not just the cap space, but the picks and prospects to be perhaps the best trade partner you can find. But it doesn't make any sense to do it now for them. That's the problem.
Now, did that come with a caveat, Frank? Was that the Arizona Coyotes or the Utah
Coyotes? I see where you're going there.
Right? And because think about it. If you're now the new owner, let's say they move teams in May, right? And I'm using May because that's when it was announced that Atlanta was going to Winnipeg. And if that happens, Now you're that team and you come July 1st, you're in a new city and you're like, hey, we need a guy who's got some name recognition. We're going to bring in Jake and we're going to overpay him because we have more cap space than any team in the league.
Right.
Right. So that one would make sense as a free agent signing trade. Probably not, but like Colorado.
This may be your only chance to get him. That's the other part that you have to consider.
Yeah, fair. But well, you'd have to do it as a sign. I'd have to, if I'm Arizona and I'm,
I can't see that happening with them. I can't see with everything in flux that their owner says, hey, here's, you can have a $70 million line item that we're going to commit to, which may be part of a sale. No one wants that on their books.
No, no.
So I,
even though the new owner would buy the team, Frank, and then turn around in the first
and do the same thing. Yeah.
Do the same thing. They don't want it existing because it wasn't their idea. Yes. I understand how that makes a lot of sense.
And they don't have a defenseman under contract next season on their NHL roster.
They got some RFAs who can't really walk, but yeah, I see your point. So anyway, Colorado needs him desperately, right? Like they got
they're one of the teams, but I wouldn't say they're the best fit. So I've got my teams are Arizona, Carolina, Colorado, Detroit, Edmonton, Florida, New York Rangers, Vancouver Canucks, and Vegas Golden Knights. If I had to pick three best fits, it would be Vegas, Detroit, and Carolina.
See, I think Carolina really needs a center.
Yeah, but how many times over? Yeah,
I know they need a score. You're right.
You said you've blasted them saying you need a superstar difference maker.
But I don't think he's that. I think he's closer to Sebastian Aho.
I don't think he's a complimentary player.
Yeah, I think he's elite.
Part about the Guentzel thing is I think I looked it up over the last two seasons. He's only played 100 minutes total. Without Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, plays a lot with Sid and that helps. But he's also a pretty good player. Like I've had, Mike Rupp, who covers all their games, says, hey, you know, like he has success, not just because of Sid. He brings a lot of Sid success too. He works well with him, according to Rupper, and he sees him way more than I do.
The numbers are undeniable. Jake Guentzel, fifth in the league in scoring chances, sixth in shots from the slot, ninth in shots from the inner slot, and ninth in deflections. Only five players in the league have a higher expected goals per 60 minutes than Guentzel. Pasternak, Matthews, John Tavares, and Zach Hyman.
Yeah. Oh, no, he goes, Guentzel goes where the goals are scored. There's no question about that.
So Detroit with an extension, though, that makes sense.
That's a fascinating one. Yes, it does.
Carolina, they've got cap space because their whole team is in flux. They've got Teravainen up this year. They've got Brett Pesce and Brady Shea up on their back end.
If you get Jake Guentzel, you're getting more of the same in Carolina, and that's why I wouldn't do it.
But what if Aho it plays the role of Sid?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, he might be the best option of guys available over the next few years. You could be right.
Seriously, tell me where they're going to get a 40 goal scorer.
Yeah, well, if he is a 40 goal scorer twice, so that's fair. He's probably a little bit higher than some, but he probably makes the most sense for a fit in Carolina because they're good as is. So they would add another and he's probably the most dangerous scorer to their team. Right. He's a better scorer than any goal scorer they have. I think that's a fair statement. So, yeah, he would make sense there. Yeah. The other teams like Edmonton could really use him, but Edmonton probably has other issues they'd like to address too. Cause if they get Guentzel, that they're putting all their bullets in one.
Yeah. It kills everything else that they might want to do for the most part. And I'm really not convinced that Edmonton needs him. Like, how different is Guentzel than Evander Kane?
Yeah, fair.
How different is Guentzel than Zach Hyman?
Well, yeah, I think they're different. I think Guentzel can score a little bit more from distance, but the thing is having one on each really line. Like,
look at all the things I just said to you.
Yeah.
He's neck and neck with Hyman in all of those categories.
Yeah, but having one on each line, Frank, I think right now there's a big hole in Edmonton. Like, they have five top six players, not six.
But is that their biggest need?
It's a good question.
I think they need more true, authentic defenders.
Well, I wrote it 3 weeks ago that if it was me, I would have went out and got Nick Dowd and Beck Malenstein together as a duo out of Washington that doesn't cost you a lot. I know it even might cost you a first rounder, but you get Nick Dowd at $1.3 million for 2 years. I think that, and you get Beck Malenstein, I would do that because that Edmonton needs more sandpaper and defensive awareness and some offensive creativity in their bottom six. Dowd can score. Like, look at Dowd's numbers. He had 13 goals, 5-on-5 last year. That's really good for a bottom six player in today's NHL. It doesn't get power play time. That's all 5-on-5. And he takes all the, he can take all the tougher, he doesn't have to take all with McDavid, but he can take a lot of tough minutes. Even if it's one or two shifts a period that saves McDavid or Draisaitl from the other team's best line, that that allows you then to put them out against the other team's bottom six guys. And that's a mismatch massively for Edmonton. So yeah, I do think that's their number one priority. That and a number, they need another veteran defenseman just for depth. More, but that's pretty easy, I think, to find. So That's what I think theirs are. Gensel would be a really nice addition. But if you look at the history, I'm not sold that the Oilers would give up a first for a guy that they have virtually no chance of re-signing.
Yeah, it's another great point. There's no way they could really fit him in.
And I don't think Jake Gensel, I don't know. Lots of American guys don't sign in Canada. That's just a fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're... They can't afford him. That's the easiest way to say it. No need to even go into the American part.
Yeah. A few other guys near the top of your list, Frank, of trade guys. If you look at best partners available, and like Noah Hanifin, you were the first one that had the Tampa Bay connection to Hanifin. Do you see, like, for him and Tanev, who do you think are their top three most realistic fits?
I'll start with Tanev. I'll say Dallas, Toronto, and I'm torn between Van, Winnipeg, and Florida.
Oof. Yeah, see, Winnipeg is the one. That's the team that came for me. Is I think Winnipeg's good, and Winnipeg's gonna win with defense. That's, you know, and I know they went out and got Sean Monahan, but look at all their numbers. Defense is their, it's their calling card. So why not improve the area that you want to play the best? And that's what Tanev would do for the Jets.
I mean, he'd be good anywhere. I just think Dallas needs a different element.
Okay.
I said this the other day, 22nd in the league in block shots. Tanev is second personally. That just makes sense. He's different than the rest of their D-men.
And if Calgary can get, you know, Winnipeg and Dallas in a little bit of a bidding war, maybe somehow you squeak out something else in that deal, because you look at that central division, Frank, my goodness, that is tight amongst those three teams.
Yeah. I think the clear best fit for me is Dallas, but Dallas. I also really like the idea of him going back to Van.
Yeah.
They could use one more defenseman. They've had some injury issues with Susie, who's working his way back. I don't know.
Yeah. What about Hanifin?
Hanifin's a lot tougher. I'm really having a hard time with that market for Hanifin.
I honestly think, Frank, I don't think the return is going to be as big as some people think. You just, you alluded to earlier, I don't think it's going to be that big.
I think the Flames are already coming to grips with the idea that it's not going to be.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the teams that would be in the mix don't have the assets.
Bingo.
Boston, Florida, Tampa. Between the three of those teams, none of them has a first-round pick this year. I think only Boston has one next year, 2025. And then Florida and Tampa don't have one until 2026.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that help Calgary?
No, Calgary, honestly, I think might be better suited to try to find a sign and trade for a non-playoff team right now. Now, Hannafin might not do it, but if he could get the guaranteed money, I would at least try to explore that avenue right now.
But what's his incentive to do that? He's going to get paid right. Either way. Wouldn't you want to go somewhere if you have to go somewhere temporarily to a place where you have a chance to win this year?
Yeah. But if you look at the top teams, do a lot of them really have the money to give him what he wants, even in the summertime?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're Tampa, you could map out a way.
God, I don't know how. Like, they already got like 9 guys for 60 plus mil, but
I think they have $10 million. It would be basically trying to find a way to make $10 or $11 million work between Hanifin and Stamkos.
Yeah. Which is,
but then you could also move someone from your team to create more.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Tampa's made hard decisions every year in the summer, moving guys out. That Ross Colton is the latest example last year. Couldn't afford to pay him. Got to move him.
Yeah. Yeah, they could. You're right. So,
I mean, gotten themselves into trouble is like the Connor Sherry deal at $2 million a year. That's a tough one.
I just think 10 points
this year. Like, I still, even last year, coming off a 15-goal, 37-point season, I was saying to myself in the summer, what does this guy do to help you? And then they give him 3 years.
Like, honestly, when I look at the Tanev and Hanifin returns, Frank, I think Flame fans are going to have to brace for it's not going to be as good of a return as they think.
But that's, I think, why you place even more emphasis on squeezing every last drop out of the Tanev deal as possible, which I think is why he hasn't been traded yet.
Yeah, you could be right.
They're willing to risk whatever happens injury-wise, hoping that he just holds up so that they can get as much as they can for him. It's a bidding war. There's probably 10 teams in the mix that have inquired or have been seriously in it on Tanev.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the bidding war works for them. The housing market right now. So see how that goes. A few other things, Frank, from the weekend. Of course, quite a night in Chicago. It's a Chris Chelios night. It would happen to be the return of Patrick Kane into Chicago. And of course, Chelios, addresses Patrick Kane in his speech. The crowd goes nuts. Then Kane scores the overtime winner. In typical Patrick Kane fashion, it was quite the night in Chicago for Chelios. They brought back a lot of his teammates are on the ice. And, the crowd was loving it. There hasn't been a lot of reasons to celebrate in the last few years for Chicago. But, man, they got a pretty, Chelios is a great player, Roenick. But then you look at the three cups. Like they'll have lots of reasons to have those type of nights. And that's really, I think, what the fans are going to be looking forward to most here for the next few years are those type of evenings.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they do have Connor Bedard and they'll have a lot to look forward to.
But it'll take longer than people think, Frank. I'm just pointing that out.
Okay. I disagree. But it was the Kane ovation that got me. Like, they just didn't want to sit down. He had to take 3 separate laps around the rink. Like, it was interesting to watch. Like, even the officials on the ice were like, okay, do we blow the whistle here? Like, what? It was like, it had gone on so long and was so impressive, the send-off that he got, that just, it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Well, you think about what Patrick Kane, they win a lottery to get him and how different their organization would have been. Cause I've always said it. I felt Patrick Kane was the most important player during their cup winning years. That, like, Duncan Keith was very good. And Jonathan Toews was very good. But to me, Patrick Kane, he, especially in the playoffs, was a stone cold killer.
Because he scored goals like he did in overtime.
It was Patrick Kane. And I could see why he was like Patrick Kane for years, Frank, when he would get the puck in the offensive zone, he would have it down low at the circles and he would circle back up to the blue line. Like, it was like, okay, something great's happening right now. Like, I firmly believe that for many years, he was the most dangerous player in the NHL with a puck on a stick in the offensive zone. It wasn't close. And he would just, it was almost like he got the puck and he'd start circling back and he was just like, okay, here we go. And he would get excited. And it was just like, oh, it was breathtaking to watch. And I could see how the Chicago fans, who is a really good hockey market, have seen a lot of really dynamic players over the years. They understood the importance of Patrick Kane. Because I think sometimes, as crazy as it sounds, it's that team was so good and they had Marian Hossa and Seabrook, like that lot of really good players. But
they were all like there, Kane, by the way.
Oh, as they should be. But Kane, to me, was always at the top.
So I would agree with you, and I would say still today, right now, I don't know how many players I would pick before Kane if I needed a huge goal.
That's a fair point.
I mean, honestly, how long is the list? Like, I could see you making the case for Austin Matthews at the rate that he scored.
Yes.
Maybe McDavid? Maybe Dreisaitl? Like, honestly, Pastrnak, who else would it be? Kane now, that gave him, the two-point game gave him 28 points in 27 games, which, by the way, is bang on for the 85-point prediction that I had. I said 85-point pace to close out the season. Now, he's still got 20-some games to go, but it looks like he's only getting, it looks like he's only getting stronger right now. Look at the week he's had. Two unreal OT goals, making things happen. He looks like a guy to me that's just getting his strength back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why can't he be an impact guy until his 40s?
Oh, he might be. You know, the one guy actually, Frank, now we haven't seen him in the playoffs, but one guy who scores some big timely goals really is Elias Pettersson in Vancouver. He has a tendency to score the key goal at the key time. Now we have seen in the playoffs, it's a different animal, but I've seen that from him. He's shown signs of it, but as we all know, the playoffs are a much, much different story. And it's a bigger moment, just the reality of it, right? There's more on the line.
Speaking of Pettersson, there's just something odd happening there. And I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but I know the Canucks really wanted an answer by the deadline, and I don't know if they're going to get it. It is, they've put the money on the table. They've basically said either way, 4 years, 8 years, 5 years, whatever it is, we are going to pay you. Just tell us what you want.
So what's the holdup?
I don't know. I don't know. It does not make sense to me.
Yeah.
I think we're reaching like the theater of the bizarre.
Mm.
Obviously great team right now.
Yeah.
One of the foundational franchise pillars. What more do you like? You've got the money. You've got the great team. What more do you want?
Yeah. Like, and Vancouver, they don't look to me like a one-off. Like Vancouver with Hughes and Demko and him, like they should be poised to be a really competitive team. Even if he only signs for 4 years, like, take an Austin Matthews contract and go 4 years. Your team's going to be highly competitive for those 4 years. There's no guarantee on any team you sign you're going to win. So you want to be in a competitive team that you think has a good chance to win.
It's also a great place to live with a proud tradition of Swedes impacting their franchise. Like it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No. Quickly, Frank, another thing over the weekend, Nikita Kucherov for the second time in his career, first player in the league to score 100 points in the season, did it in 59 games, which is pretty good. I think the only active player better is Connor McDavid, did it in fewer games twice, 53 and 56. But Kucherov, he has 40 more points than anyone else on his team. And there's still 20 some games left in the year. Like Nikita Kucherov, if anybody does, like, I know everybody, hey, Matthews is going to get 70 and McDavid's going to get 100 assists. And those are unreal numbers. But the wording of the rule, do not count out Nikita Kucherov. When you have most valuable to your team, come on. Like he could easily be the front runner still. He should be. I know he's not in a Canadian market and he's in Tampa Bay and some people are tired of Tampa Bay, but I'm telling you, you can't overlook Nikita Kucherov's season, man. 40 more points. And it's not like Braden Point's a schmuck. Braden Point's a 50-goal scorer. Yeah. Guy scored 100 points, and he's got 40 more points than Braden Point, for God's sakes.
So that, to me, isn't the most impressive stat. When talking about Kucherov's case, it's that he's factored in on 102 of Tampa's 206 goals scored.
Yeah, is that the highest rate? 40, that's, was it 48%?
49.5%. Call it 50%. He... Yeah. half of their entire scoring has at some point it's come off of his stick. That's a pretty impressive number.
Yes,
most players are lucky to get to the mid 30s.
Yeah. Most of the team's best guys are like 41, 42, I've looked at. And sometimes you get up to 45. But yeah, he's at 49. I did this a week ago or a week and a half, and he was at 47.8. So obviously he's got 4 points last night. So keeps growing. But yeah, you think about it. Like there's going to be, and I wrote about it. To me, there's lots of guys that have strong cases, but Nikita Kucherov's case is pretty damn solid.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. We had this huge debate last Monday about the Hart Trophy, right?
Yeah.
And I saw you wrote about it after the fact, but you didn't include Hellebuyck. You're just not a believer.
No, I don't think he's, for my ballot, he wouldn't even like he, I don't think he'd be five, right? He's very good. But to me, when you don't play in 20% of your team's games, 25% of your team's games, to me, you can't be by the wording of the rule, you can't be the most valuable to your team.
Damn. I didn't present convincing enough argument for you.
No, you didn't.
It's on me.
Well, to be honest, Frank, I'd had the article mostly written before we did our pod and you brought up Hellebuyck and you made me think about it, but I still couldn't do it.
Admitting that you were a lazy editor, is what you're saying.
No, not a lazy editor.
You didn't get mentioned in the story. Like the fact that you could control F, search for Hellebuyck and not find him in a Hart Trophy story, to me, that's incredulous. You didn't even mention the case.
No, I didn't. Because I thought it was a four horse. Because to me, he'd be the outside horse. He's not in the top four.
Okay.
No. It's not a participation ribbon. It's not who I think is going to get a vote. Like, I do know that, hey, Frank Saravalli might have him on his ballot. But right, would you have him in top two? That'd be the question.
Well, how little Winnipeg scores, to me, he might be number one.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens when your ballot comes out in June. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
What's going on, boys? I got a fresh edition of Fill in the Blank here for you on a Monday morning. It is, as always, brought to you by DoorDash. Our Canadian listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more. All you need to do is download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code Nation25. Restaurants, groceries, more, all delivered right to your door with DoorDash. Do you want the Hart Trophy odds from our friends at Betano? See just how off Frank is with Hellebuyck needing to be in the mix. Austin Matthews is the leader, plus 150. So he's actually fallen a little bit compared to the last time we did it. Kucherov, plus 250. He's tied with Nathan MacKinnon there as well. Connor McDavid plus 400. Then you got to go a few more spots down to get Connor Hellebuck at 44-1. So Matthew's still the favorite, but I think it's hard to make a case against Kucherov when you scored that much more than anyone else on your team.
And Matthews isn't even leading scorer on his own team. Like, and I also understand he's in the biggest market. I understand all that, but come on.
Yeah. Frank.
First off, there's no value in Matthews.
No.
And 44-1. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's great value for you, Frank.
I mean, like, I can't wager on the Hart Trophy, but if I could, I would. Like, that's what I would pick.
Yeah. Interesting. Speaking of Nikita Kucherov, 102 points in 59 games. He's on pace for whatever, 141, 142, right in that range. So your first fill in the blank, Nikita Kucherov, will finish with a blank points. Jason?
I think I predicted 137 a while back, so I'll stick with that.
That's the first number that came into my mind, 137. But I'll go over. I'll go 139.
139. Okay. So he'll slow down.
I hope he gets to 140, man. I love the numbers.
The interesting thing is, like, this isn't a Tampa Bay team that's like absolutely running away with the division or the conference or anything. Like, no. They're still going to have to play real hard down the stretch. Like, I don't know, maybe he won't slow down. Maybe he'll speed up a little, finish with like 145. I wouldn't knock it when you consider how important these games are for the Bolts. Let's talk about a couple of teams quickly in the New Jersey Devils, first out East, who they are slipping right now, guys. Not going well for New Jersey, 4-5-1 in their last 10. Our friends at Betano have them at plus 215 to make the playoffs, which is a percentage of about 31%. But I'll ask you guys, the New Jersey Devils have a blank percent chance of making the playoffs. Frank?
I'm going to say 37.
So a little bit higher than the books at 37%.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was an interesting headline today from Ryan Novozinski at NJ.com, who covers the team, and he said it's time for Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald to step up and do what's right. Fire Lindy.
Sheesh.
It certainly feels to me like Lindy Ruff is walking a tightrope that, to be fair, part of it should be on the general manager himself. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, certainly no one's suggesting that Tom Fitzgerald, be called into question about his job security. He just signed an extension. It's that he left this defense and goaltending incredibly vulnerable. We've talked a million times this year about how many defensemen they lost and didn't replace, and the huge seasons that were needed from both Luke Hughes and Simone Nemitz to get there. Not going to be enough. So I do think certainly roster construction is a valid question. But to me, that breakdown that we did last Monday, and I tweeted the link over the weekend, from John Goyens, that breakdown was like so good in explaining just how casual the Devils are with the puck, the poor attention to detail and decision making, what seems to me like a lack of accountability. And then you hear Lindy Ruff say point blank that it's the media's fault that their power play is 2-for-46. Like, I'm sorry, what? What was that? Like, that to me reeks of a coach who's grasping for straws.
Yeah. Craig's.
Yeah. You could make the move, but I'll say the question of the percentage, Philly's the team they got to catch. They don't have to catch Tampa. They don't have to catch Detroit. They have to catch Philly. They're five back with one game in hand. I'm going to say they got about a 30% chance. I guess they could fire the coach and, I watched that video, Frank, and there was lots of video evidence to suggest that, systemically, or the players aren't buying into the system, or the system they're playing doesn't encourage a little bit more attention and detail defensively. I think that was fair. So you can make the coaching change, but coaching change is one thing. Is it, are you then going to add? Right.
That's what I was going to say. That's why my number's higher, because I think that one of those two things is going to happen. You're either going to add in a significant way at the deadline, either on defense, or like Hanifin could be a target for them. Yeah. You add on defense, or you add in net, or you make the coaching change.
Yeah. And you might do both, right? You might add and do a coaching change. And I think Philly might actually trade some guys here. So, maybe my numbers
at the same time, those two things sort of balance each other out. And if you get a new coaching bump, as we've seen the Oilers, the Wild, how many teams have been much better since making a coaching change? I wouldn't rule out the possibility of it.
Well, those two, but then there's the Islanders and the other teams. But I'll say this about the Devils. I think they get in because of Flyers, but you know what? I think they would, I wouldn't give them much chance against Carolina or the Rangers. I'll say that.
So you think they might get in because of the Flyers, but you only have them at 30%?
Yeah. Well, injuries, whatever. And I still, you know what? I don't know why, but I'm still not sold on ruling out the Pittsburgh Penguins, which is probably really stupid of me. I'll admit it openly. But the Pens are actually better than the Devils right now. So that's why I'm only giving them 30, because the Pens are 2 points back the Devils with three games in hand.
Yeah, if the Penguins win all their games in hand, they would actually pass the Philadelphia Flyers. So games in hand only means something if you win them. And it's not like this Pittsburgh team should be trusted to win them, but still.
Huh. You have Sid, though, have a night like Sunday, 4-point game. Like, it is really hard to rule them out.
Yes.
He's trying to do everything he can to put that team on his back so that they do get in. I'm with you, though. Like, I don't care what the metrics or underlying numbers say. I don't even really care what the standings say. I think we've seen enough from the Penguins to know what they are, but it's a weird Eastern
Conference. Third play, like, they're in the right division, because no other division would they have a chance to finish third.
Yeah. All right. Last one. We'll go out west. Similar line of question, but instead it's a team that's getting hot. It's the Calgary Flames. A BOA win on the weekend. They've won 3 in a row, 7-3 in their last 10 games. They are 5 points back of the final wildcard spot in the Western Conference. Our friends at Patano have them at plus 350 or a 22% chance of making the playoffs. I will ask you guys, though, the Calgary Flames have a blank percent chance of making the playoffs, Jason.
Sorry, Flame fans. I'll say one, because they're going to trade guys off. And yes, they're winning, but Nashville's won 5 in a row. The team they're chasing is heated up at the exact same time. There's the Blues and the Wild in between them. They're going to trade guys off. I'll say 1% chance, because you're telling me there's a chance, but I think it's pretty low.
I'm going to say 10. I think if the Flames keep Markstrom, I wonder if there's a chance that they could have their cake and eat it too. Trade all these guys away, pull a Nashville Predators from last year, scrap till the very end, and maybe, just maybe, get in the final week. It's a long shot, which is why I said 10.
Yeah.
But it's a straight up pillow fight for the 8th seed. And yeah. I also think, I like the Wild right there too.
Yeah, no, the Wild are right in there. They're 7-2-1. The Flames are 7-3. So Flames have actually lost a point on Minnesota here in their last 10 games, and they played really well. So, and I don't see Minnesota trading off, Frank. I really don't. I don't see them trading Fleury. I wouldn't be shocked if Bill Guerin added something small. I wouldn't be surprised at all by that.
Fleury came out over the weekend in The Athletic and said, Minnesota's my team.
Yeah.
So he's not going anywhere, it seems. And I wouldn't be shocked if they traded Brandon Duhaime, though. I believe the Vancouver Canucks are very interested in Duhaime.
Who the hell don't the Vancouver Canucks want right now?
I know. It's crazy. They're in on everything.
All right. That is a wrap.
Traders in the league.
That is a wrap on this week's edition of Fill in the Blank, as always, delivered by DoorDash.
Let's wrap with this, because we got to run. Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor, dailyfaceoffsurvivor.com. New week, new game. But one word to describe Matt Rempe's first week. Well, it's our last Fill in the Blank.
Ooh, gosh. Pretty electrifying for him, but my goodness, man, I don't think he has to take on every heavyweight in the first week. God, he's taking some big shots. I like it, but or maybe play a little bit of defense in those fights. Holy cow. It's just, you hit me and I hit you, and it's exciting to watch, but whew, that is a tough way to make your NHL debut in the week. But it's been unreal for him, from an outdoor game to some huge tilts. Yeah. Like, the Ranger fans are loving him. He's a cult hero. There's no question about it early on.
Game-winning goal. I mean, I know he said it's the ugliest first NHL goal anyone scores, But game winner in Philly, a game they to keep their streak going. I know they lost it to the Blue Jackets. What was that game growing up? Was it called Rock'em Sock'em Robots, where you would just like keep pounding the thing and the one blue guy and the one red guy yes. would just keep punching each other in the face?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what it feels like watching the Rempire State Building, which is an elite nickname. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, all I could think of was some CTE after that week.
Yeah, well, I watched the replays again. There was the thing. I know we always jump to the CTE conclusion, but if they talk about how it's repeated over and over, like lots of them, and there's lots of punches thrown. There was a few that land for sure, but you know what? One or two punches isn't going to lead to CTE. I think I'm always cautious about wanting to jump to that conclusion.
But it becomes a self-perpetuating, you know, thing where he does what he does in the stadium series. Big stage, everyone sees it. Then it's all anyone was talking about on Saturday was the fight that he had with Deloria. So naturally, some guy on the Blue Jackets is trying to make a name for himself, and he's going to try and make Rempe drop the gloves in it. And he's trying to make a name for himself in the NHL. He's trying to create a steady job living for himself. So he's going to take on all comers just because he has to, even though that's probably not really what he is.
The good news for him, though, Frank, there's probably maybe 10 guys total in the league that would do it.
But everyone wants a piece of him now is my point. And then when you stop answering the bell, then people are like, oh, what are you, soft? Like, think about the position that, I mean, Nicolas Deslauriers essentially emasculated him in warmups. Stood over him and was like, we need to fight today. I don't know the exact words, but said, yeah, we need to fight today.
Yeah, no, yeah.
In warm-up, standing over him, like, what? You have no choice. You're 6'7". You have to answer the bell.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot to be in. I think at some point it's unfair that that's the path, but.
Well, I'll say this. That's why, to me, somebody in the Rager organization pulls him aside. Hey, Matt, guess what? You know what? We don't care about the outside noise. I'm telling you, we don't care. We see you. You can play. This guy, you don't have to fight. And tell him that. And then it's like, all right. Now, maybe he does anyway in the heat of the moment. But I think there is imperative. Maybe some of the organization already did say that. But you can say, hey, kid, you don't have to take on every single. You're not the heavyweight champ yet. You just came in the league, for God's sakes. Well, usually you're the guy who's going up against the heavyweight champ to try to make a name for yourself.
At 6'7", he might be the new heavyweight champ.
Yeah. Maybe like there's Reeves is still pretty damn tough. Like,
you sorry. Reeves would have to play first.
Okay. Fair point.
And then the next thing would be, I don't know. I think he's lost a bit of his edge. That's just me. Yeah. All talk, no game.
Yeah. There's just not a lot of guys. Like, it's funny. Like, he just, you know,
Deslauriers is legit. Like, he toe to toe.
Yeah. Like, you go around the league, how many guys would really do it? There's some. But there's not many. That's all. Like, it's not like it was in the 80s and 90s where every team had three guys, for God's sakes. Yeah. It's crazy. So nuts. Frankie, have yourself a great week. Remember, go to dailyfaceoff.com for the Wendy Survivor Pool. And we're going to see. Frank, I'm going to come out of retirement for this week and see how I do.
About time.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh Nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.